listening to the Kill Radio Weekly News. I'm your announcer, DJ Shy John, here in Los Angeles. Today is December 17th, 2013, and here in the Harper's Weekly Review, also dated December 17th, in Kiev, a third week of protests began over the failure by Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych to enter into political and trade agreements with the European Union and to avoid economic rapprochement from Russia. An estimated 200,000 demonstrators gathered in Independence Square to argue for greater engagement with Europe. Tens of thousands of anti-EU protesters were bussed into nearby European Square. The European Union withdrew from negotiations with the Ukrainian government, and riot police dismantled barricades set up by protesters, then built new ones to separate the opposing factions. On this side of our ice wall, you have Yanukovych's regime of slavery and corruption, said a plumber. On our side, life is beautiful. We have a lot of bread and lemons, said a college student. A riot took place in Singapore for the first time since 1969, and in Thailand, where former Prime Minister Abhisit Vejjajiva was charged with murder. Wealthy citizens were joining rallies against the government of Yingluck Shinawatra, whose supporters are largely rural and poor. I'm not really for democracy, said energy drink tycoon Pech Osathenugra. North Korea executed an uncle of Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un and accused him of distributing pornography, failing to clap with sufficient enthusiasm, and sabotaging a monument by having it erected in the shade. Whew. Chang pretended to uphold the party and leader, said the state-run Korean Central News Agency, but was engrossed in such factional acts as dreaming different dreams. Something to look out for in North Korea. At a memorial for former South African President Nelson Mandela in Johannesburg, a sign language interpreter translated 17 speeches using random hand gestures. 17 speeches. I had a breakdown, he said. I see angels come from sky to the ground. Mandela's body was transported to his childhood village of Kunu and laid to rest. Residents of Newtown, Connecticut chose not to hold a public ceremony to commemorate the one-year anniversary of a shooting that killed 20 children and 7 adults at Sandy Hook Elementary School. If we build it, they will come, said Newton First Selectman E. Patricia Leodra. So we have to not build it. Students at Arapahoe High School in Centennial, Colorado, held a candlelight vigil for Claire Davis, who was in a coma after being shot in the head by an 18-year-old classmate who subsequently killed himself. A Georgia high school student was suspended for a year for hugging his teacher. And a Madison, Wisconsin business that offered therapeutic cuddling for $60 an hour closed after 3 weeks in operation. Chinese hackers were reported to have breached the networks of several European foreign ministries by sending emails advertising nude photos of former French First Lady Carla Bruni Sarkozy. France's Senate approved a law allowing officials to monitor citizens' digital communications in real time. And it was revealed that the U.S. National Security Agency had deployed agents to search for terrorists in the online video game World of Warcraft. Uruguay became the first country to legalize the cultivation, sale, and consumption of marijuana. The decision relied on rather precarious and unsubstantiated assumptions, said UN International Narcotics Control Board President Raymond Yans. Tell that old man to stop lying, said Uruguayan President Jose Mujica. The mayor of Bogota was removed from office over allegations he had mismanaged a shift from privatized garbage collection to a government-run service. Canada Post announced that it would phase out home delivery over the next 5 years and apologize for returning a six-year-old's letter to Santa Claus because he had addressed it to the North Powell, P-O-W-L-E. I guess they couldn't find it. Prince Henry of Wales reached the South Pole, and American scientists announced that they had recorded the lowest temperature ever measured on Earth, minus 137 degrees Fahrenheit, along an East Antarctic plateau. Google acquired robots named Big Dog, Wildcat, Atlas, and Cheetah. Iran announced that it had sent a monkey named Fargam into space. The Jovian moon of Europa was shown to be spouting plumes of water taller than Mount Everest, and China debarked the rover Jade Rabbit onto the moon's Bay of Rainbows. Oslo added hot pink decals reading poo, piss, and toilet paper to its manhole covers. Paleontologists determined that ichthyosaurs were incapable of slurping their prey, and that Edmontosaurus regalis had a cock-like comb. There is a long and sad history of neglect, said a researcher in the study of dinosaur skin. A study led by a physician at Imperial College London posited that Gollum would have defeated Bilbo Baggins in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit had he sunned himself more often or eaten quiche instead of blind fish. The triumph of good over evil, the study concluded, may be assisted to some extent by poor diet and lack of sunlight. Remember that. This article written by Stephanie McFeeters. This is Not So Shy John, reporting for Kill Radio Weekly News. I came across this article, www.digitaljournal.com. FBI calls half of populace with 9/11 doubts potential terrorists. This was written by Ralph Lopez on September 19th of this year. A Department of Justice memo instructs local police under a program named Communities Against Terrorism to consider anyone who harbors conspiracy theories about 9/11 to be a potential terrorist. The memo thus adds 9/11 official story skeptics to a growing list of targets described by federal law enforcement to be security threats, such as those who express libertarian philosophies, Second Amendment-oriented views, interest in self-sufficiency, fears of Big Brother or big government, and declarations of constitutional rights and civil liberties. A newly released national poll shows that 48% of Americans either have some doubts about the official account of 9/11 or do not believe it at all. The FBI memo entitled Potential Indicators of Terrorist Activities Related to Sleepers says that people who should be considered suspicious of possible involvement in terrorist activity include those who hold the attitude described as conspiracy theories about Westerners. The memo continues, ergo sic, the CIA arranged for 9/11 to legitimize the invasion of foreign lands. And on the website, they show the actual memo. Sleepers refers to sleeper cells in FBI jargon, which are terrorists awaiting orders to be activated into terrorist activity. In 1998, it was declassified by the Pentagon that the Joint Chiefs of Staff had approved a plan in 1962 to attack and kill U.S. citizens to provide justifications for U.S. military intervention in Cuba. The plan was codenamed Operation Northwoods. The face page of the declassified document is represented below, and it is stamped unclassified. The plan was signed by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Lyman Lemnitzer. It was rejected by President John F. Kennedy, who demoted Lemnitzer. According to the polling firm YouGov, 38% of Americans have some doubts about the official account of 9/11. 10% do not believe it at all, and 12% are unsure about it. The FBI memo issued by the Department of Justice Assistance, an arm of the U.S. Department of Justice, is posted at, among other departments, the Columbus, Ohio Police Department website. The Citizens Watchdog, publicintelligence.net, has also posted a copy. The FBI document also includes a reason for suspicion of involvement in terrorist activities. Quote, excusing violence against Americans on the grounds that American actions provoked the problem, end quote. The latter is an apparent reference to thinking such as the blowback doctrine, which criticizes U.S. foreign policy and links alleged errors in that policy, such as the invasion of Iraq, to terrorist activity. The document cites fury at the global policies of the U.S. Among well-known doubters of the official 9/11 account are many military officers, law enforcement personnel, firefighters, and pilots, all working through affinity groups. One is U.S. Army Major General Albert Stubblebine, who has said of the three buildings which fell on 9/11, they didn't fall down because airplanes hit them. They fell down because of explosives went off inside. Demolition. End quote. Most recently, former Fox News anchorman Ben Swan has questioned the official 9/11 story. This September 11th, a group of citizens, architects, and engineers, led by families of 9/11 victims, unveiled an international ad campaign questioning the official version of 9/11. The campaign is sponsoring signs and billboards around the world which ask the question, did you know a third tower fell on 9/11? The 9/11 issue has been actively pursued on the internet and largely excluded by the major media. However, news organizations such as Time have covered the Architects and Engineers billboard campaign, sponsored by a group called 2,000 Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Bloggers and other citizens have long argued that the science employed by the official story is impossible, and that the three towers must have been destroyed by some other means. As the FBI memo states, some argue that 9/11 was planned by a covert, relatively small but well-placed coup faction within the U.S. government to legitimize the invasion of foreign lands, notably Iraq and the Middle East. In 2005, General Wellesley Clark, former presidential candidate, said that he was given a copy of a memo by a ranking member of the Bush administration that revealed that war hawks in the Pentagon planned on attacking 7 countries in 5 years, with Iraq only the beginning. Other federal law enforcement agencies have been criticized for sweeping characterizations of potential terrorists, which demonize constitutionally protected activity. In 2011, 18-year law enforcement veteran James Wellesley Rawls warned that the Department of Homeland Security was being trained to consider as potential terrorists, among other people, those who had expressed libertarian philosophies, Second Amendment-oriented views, self-sufficiency, stockpiling food, ammo, hand tools, medical supplies, fear of economic collapse, fears of Big Brother or big government, and declarations of constitutional rights and civil liberties. Since Hurricane Katrina, food stockpiling consultants and merchants have reported greater than ever activity and interest in storing long-term supplies of non-perishable food and water supplies. In 2009, an uproar was created when the Department of Homeland Security issued a report describing returning Iraq veterans as potential terrorists. Public outcry prompted Speaker of the House John Bonner to denounce the characterization as offensive. In 2012, NetworkWorld.com reported on an entire set of Communities Against Terrorism circulars coming out of the Bureau for Justice Assistance. Once again, this comes to you from www.digitaljournal.com. That is all. Now, here's an article from Yahoo Finance. The column is called The Exchange, and the article is called While You're Working, Congress Isn't. This was written by Rick Newman 20 hours ago for The Exchange. America has a new public enemy number one, and chances are you voted for it. CEOs are the usual target of ire over the diverging fortunes of the rich and the rest, but 2013 is turning into the year when members of Congress made greedy CEOs look good. Congress had its least productive year in decades in 2013 and may have done more harm than good through a government shutdown and other gridlock-fueled antics that hurt the economy. The partisan hostility in Washington has pushed Congress's already low approval rating to the sorriest level on record. Base pay for members of Congress is $174,000 per year, with the Speaker of the House, currently John Bonner, earning $223,500, and leadership members of both parties earning $193,400. Generous retirement benefits and other perks may be worth up to $110,000 per year more. There's nothing new about those numbers, and pay rates, in fact, have been frozen since 2009. A dwindling usefulness. What is new is the dwindling amount of useful activity that takes place in Congress. The legislature passed just 57 bills in 2013, compared with an average of 282 passed bills per year from 1973 through 2012. So the 2013 tally was 80% below the historical average. The amount of legislation passed in a given year isn't necessarily a sign of success or failure, but it's not like everything's going great and Congress simply needs to stay out of the way. The economy is still weak. Unemployment levels, while improved, remain high, and America may be in a state of long-term decline. The tax code gets creakier and costlier every year. Immigration policy is way out of date. There is plenty for Congress to do if it were actually looking for something to do. At least they're not spending too much time on the clock in Washington, D.C. The media's saturation coverage of politics might leave the impression that Congress works all the time. If only. The House recently adjourned for the year after being in session for only 155 days in 2013. For $174,000, the Senate, which may adjourn later this week, has logged 146 days in session so far this year. If you're, say, a full-time corporate employee with a cushy 4 weeks of annual vacation plus all the federal holidays off, you're still required to work 231 days per year, or 49% more than a member of the House. If you only get 2 weeks of vacation, make it 241 days, or 55% more. Of course, many Americans don't even have it that good. The percentage of Americans with full-time benefits, such as paid vacation and holidays, is going down. with software firm Intuit predicting that 40% of all U.S. workers will be freelancers of some kind by 2020. No vacation. At the same time, companies are relying much more on part-timers who get limited benefits, if any. This is one of those worrisome trends Congress could be addressing if it wanted to. The local factor. But when members of Congress aren't in Washington, aren't they back home in their districts working Rotary Club meetings and sitting down with constituents to hear their concerns over coffee? Not really, unless they happen to be up for re-election. It's no accident that the House was only in session for 2 days in August and 8 in December this year, or the Senate 3 days in August and 5 so far in December. Do they rush home to meet with constituents, just as everybody's leaving for summer vacation or holiday travel? Or do members of Congress take their own extended vacations during the 2 months of the year when voters are least likely to be home? Even when Congress is in session, legislators spend relatively little time drafting laws, holding hearings, or doing the people's business. What they spend a lot of time doing is raising money for their re-election campaigns or for their own political action committees, up to half of their time by some estimates. Anybody who has spent a few days around Capitol Hill knows politicians arrive like ants on sugar whenever there's a TV camera around, while untelevised hearings or speeches in the legislative chambers are as sparsely attended as church on Monday. If you measure Congress's productivity as pay earned per law passed, the typical member this year earned $3,053 per law. The 106th Congress, in office from 1999 to 2000, passed 604 laws, earning the typical member just $460 per law passed. The 101st Congress, 89 to 90, passed 666 laws for a scant $281 per law. In that regard, no Congress in modern times has been paid more for doing less than the current group. We may even be paying them to do harm, since the 16-day government shutdown in October cost the economy about $20 billion. Other congressional behavior, such as the fiscal cliff standoff at the end of 2012 and the showdown over raising the federal borrowing limit in 2011, rattled financial markets while discouraging business and consumers from spending. In Congress's first year, 1789, members were in session for 168 days. They got paid $6 per day, the equivalent of a $26,000 salary today. And when Congress adjourned that fall, many members went home to help run the family farm or business. That group of part-time legislators, perhaps the most important Congress ever, passed many of the laws that formed the framework of the U.S. government for the next 220 years. In 2013, members of Congress worked less, got paid a lot more, and struggled to produce anything of significance. If America really is in decline, it starts on Capitol Hill. Rick Newman's latest book is Rebounders, How Winners Pivot from Setback to Success. Follow him on Twitter at Rick J. Newman. Well, and I guess that's all for the news today, ladies and gentlemen. Please have a wonderful week. Be kind to each other and be good for goodness sake, and stay out of the news.